This is a privilege, and we don't take it lightly. And it's scary, too. In fact, I knew that we would never do this. Because you see, Lanier is the guy that came up to us to ask us if we might give our testimonies at Glen Eyrie. In the Great Hall, with George Sanchez speaking, and many other things. I never expected, but two alternatives were possible. The first alternative to Don asking us was, is that we would either be in the hospital or celebrating a funeral because the disease of fear and the rigors might grab poor Jane. Or, in order to save that off, the other alternative was is that Lanier would succumb to some kind of disease that Jane put on him. But here we are. And it is different. Jane, I've got you this far. Jump into it.
Today, as I look back on my childhood, I feel very fortunate that my parents were committed to the idea that going to church was a good and necessary part of all of our lives as a family. And it definitely had an impact in my life. It meant a lot to my parents. I see George is saying it's a neat thing to see your children come to the Lord. And that as well meant a lot to my parents. It was customary in our church to go before the church and make this a public confession of your faith in Christ. You know, anywhere from the ages of 9 to 13, this was a standard practice of the regular tenders to do this. And I knew that at some point that my number was up and that I was going to, you know, need to do this. Sure enough, that time came, and whether it was due to parental pressure or peer pressure, I did exactly what was expected of me. You know, in reality, at that particular time in my life, there really wasn't a changed person, but I had a very limited understanding of what Christ had really done for me. I knew a lot of Bible stories, and that was just about it. My teenage years were probably very similar to many of yours. I had tons of fun. I had lots of friends. And as many of y'all probably had a few insecurities, I had my share as well. It was very important to me what my friends thought of me, and it was very important that I derived a lot of my significance and importance from what my friends and the input and how well I was accepted by them. You know, it was during this time that I began to formulate in my mind what a happy and meaningful life would be. And being the social person that I was, I really felt that knowing just the right kind of people and being in the right kind of organizations or clubs was really where it was all at. If church fit into any of this, it wasn't really a primary concern, but that was okay too. And by the seventh grade, I had met the ultimate Boy Scout that was later to become a cowboy. You know, the problem with Boy Scouts, though, is that they're not very interested in girls. They really are more interested in their Swiss Army knives and how each of those little trinkets work. But time was on my side. And we all through those high school years, really had a really unique friendship. We never went to the same school. But at special times, we, for some reason, always got together, and it was a really unique friendship. By the time we were in our second year of college, we kind of pretty well figured out that we didn't want to be friends anymore, that we decided that marriage was in store for us, and that's what we wanted to do. So we did get married, and Skip finished school, and he began, his career in the business world. We had several moves during that time. We'd pack up our dog. We had begun to have children, so we would pack up our three kids, and we would move whenever Skip had a different or a new job opportunity. Each time, Skip, of course, was striving for his business goals, and myself. I was really trying to take care of a small family, and I was kind of looking for the right relationships and groups, organizations to fulfill me. You might say that we were beginning to line all these little ducks in a row for us, and it seemed that all was going really well. And if we had a need in our lives, we were not aware of it.
Yes, I was a social project. There was no problem. We thought everything was great. Let me tell you, at that point in time, what was really making me tick, I wasn't motivated so much by success. I guess I did have a genuine fear of failure. But what I really liked was being in the driver's seat and everything. I liked control. I liked to choose what we were going to do or what we were going to attempt to do. I liked to formulate the plan. I loved to execute that plan. And then sit back and, you know, take responsibility for the results, whatever it might be. I guess we had a pretty good show going. We really did. Married my childhood sweetheart, junior high sweetheart. Had three children that the grandparents were really proud of. We had friends all over the state of Texas that were an encouragement to us, were very close, supported us. We'd done all the right things in the communities we lived in, all the right clubs and the civic thing. We'd even pursued probably the right kind of recreational pursuits, vacations and so forth. I had the respect and admiration of the men in my profession and the career that I was in. And I really genuinely think that all the employees that I had admired and respected me. We had a driveway, and it was full of what you're supposed to have, sailboats, sports cars. We had it pretty well all together. I even supposed that I had this thing called religion figured out. In my mind, I had no trouble with the story of Christmas and Easter that they happened 2,000 years ago. I also agreed with the scholars that God was the only God, that He was a creator, that He was a loving God. And it was on this area of the loving God that I had God pegged in a box. You see, He couldn't judge this world on absolutes. He was going to have to grade it on the curve. And knowing a lot of other folks that were like me, friends and one thing and another, I figured I could win out maybe on the curve. I was even totally comfortable around people that were missionaries and preachers. Boy, I never let them get to me except for on my turf. It was just fine as long as I was paying the bill. I controlled the conversation. We talked about sports and business. Yes, you might say, I felt like I was in the driver's seat, and things couldn't be better.
Well, then one afternoon about 15 years ago, our whole lives took a different turn. Our middle son was run over and killed by a car. And, you know, for me, that was something that... And I usually picked up the newspaper and ran about somebody else. But it was probably during this time that that I seriously began to question what the purpose of my life was. I don't want to do that. And, you know, for the next couple of years, I can see where the Lord began to strategically put people and places and situations in our lives that were eventually to draw us to Himself. And one of these couples we had not come in contact with for about 10 years. And they were old high school buddies, and Ron and Pat Pierce were their names, and they had encouraged us, had began to talk to us, and began to encourage us to come to a family conference, or to a conference, it wasn't family conference at that time, to the Glen. And they had assured us that there was plenty of recreation time, that there would be a time in the mornings where there'd be a special speaker and there would be maybe a few workshops and things to go to. It was just packed with a lot of fun and lots of, you know, kind of breaks in between, but it would just be a real, it would be a real fun time. We were looking forward to doing this, and so we came with Ron and Pat to a summer conference at Glen Eyrie one summer.
14 years ago, we roared through the first front gate out there, and boy, you talk about a kid that was lost in the tulies. It was me. Ron did say, by the way, Skip, bring a Bible, and I had no idea why. But there was only two disappointments in the first day and a half. The first disappointment was is that, by golly, we didn't get our tennis shoes on frequently enough, and there wasn't enough sports and recreation, and after all, this was a vacation in Colorado, and we were supposed to do those kind of things. The second one was, of course, another minor disappointment. There was a certain speaker. His name was George Sanchez. George stood up here on Sunday night and shot forth from something that I later found out he was an expert and authority on, that he had developed seminars, he'd produced workbooks and books, and had taught many, many times. And the amazing thing is he taught it from this book, the Bible. I never heard anybody do that before, and I turned to Jane as soon as George got finished, and this was a disappointment. I said, Jane, he was excellent, but there's really just a couple deals he's messed up on, and I'm going to take a chance to straighten him out on it. Well, the week went on, and it didn't take but a day or so for my attitude to totally change. I was really excited about the workshops, the people I was meeting, the speakers. Every piece of it was just really putting something together. And as important as the workshop leaders and the speaker was, what really started to shape me and my way of thinking was the individuals that we were meeting, that we were sitting around the coffee table downstairs, sharing meals with and talking with. It was the conferees. It was us, gang. That's who it was. Things were really changing. Though we got the good draw of being in the Cedar Ridge, and, you know, there's no private bath in the Cedar Ridge, and in the morning the boys go to this end of the hall, and girls take a right. And there I was, for the first time, confronted with men that were in business that didn't wear the collars around backwards. They could say, my life is committed to Jesus Christ. And here I was looking in the same mirror and shaving with them. And something was changing. I was forced to redefine some big words that I thought were pat for me. They were Christianity, faith, lordship, belief, and those kind of things. More than anything else, I probably suddenly found out that this old book was real and could be used right now, today. I cheated a lot. I went to double workshops. I liked one so well, I'd go back and do the same thing the next day. That's how I got fired up. But on the final day, on Friday morning, right after breakfast, our agenda in the conference manual was to do a quiet time, whatever that was. I finally found out a little bit later. And there was a verse or two written out and a few questions. We were supposed to do it with our spouses, and I looked up that morning, and there wasn't practically anybody in the King James. And Jane was gone, and Ron and Pat Pierce, the reason that we were there, the prime reason that we were there, were there. I said, hey, why don't you guys go with me? I'll show you how to do a quiet time. So we walked outside, and we got into it, and we read the passage, and I told them all there was ever to know about that passage. And Pat Pierce turned to me and looked me in the eye, and asked me a question right then and there that I had never put together for myself. She says, Skip, have you ever yielded your life to Jesus Christ? In a heartbeat, I said, no. She says, what about right now? That was the thing that I was ready for and waiting for. I yielded the control of my life to Christ. He became my Savior. I got a final zip code that's different. He became my Lord, and I became his servant.
Well, for me, that week is as vivid in my mind today as it was then. And all of these things that Skip is saying is exactly true for me, too. But there are two things that I'd like to kind of talk or, you know, relay to y'all. And one of them was, one of the morning talks was on John 15. The person who was giving this talk was Gordon Van Amberg, and I don't know if any of y'all know him, but he's a very demonstrative and an excellent communicator. On John 15, that is about the vine and the branches, and to even make his talk even more real, he had a real tree in that he was using as a demonstration for this talk. And John 15:5 says, I am the vine, and you are the branches. And he who abides in me, and I in him, will bear much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. And that really kind of slapped me right in the face, because I realized that I was not even plugged into anything, that I was not even a part of a vine or anything. And then another key person in our lives was an older couple that we had met that week. His name was Harold Tate and Pauline Tate, and they were a precious, precious little couple. And they were sitting, we were all sitting at the dinner table downstairs, and he broaches the question, when did Christ become a meaningful part of your life? And I almost melted right under the seat. I thought, I don't have an answer to that question. I really don't. And I was a little angered that he had even asked it, because those were private matters. Those were really personal, and that to me they didn't need an explanation, but I didn't have an answer. So I can remember he started at the other side, and I was the last person to be able to answer. And I couldn't even steal an answer from some of the other people. So I got up from the table and asked to be excused. And tears were just beginning to form in my eyes, and I was just really convicted. Well, later that evening, he came up to me, and he says, Jane, he said, do you think tomorrow morning that we could go out for quiet time together? And I said, sure, that'd be great. And so Friday morning, that morning, I knew two things, basically. One, I could go to that girl's room and stay there. but the other thing I knew was that if I chose to go with him, that Skip would be, as those of you who know Skip, he's always talking. And he would be so engrossed in talking with someone, he'd never know if I'd left. So, sure enough, that was basically what happened. And I kind of snuck up off the table and went out on the grounds with Harold Tate and sat down at that picnic table. And never, for the first time, I mean, this guy was just flipping through those scriptures, just explaining the gospel to me that I had heard 1,000 times, and yet I knew for the first time it was really meant for me and that I had a choice. So at that particular time, we prayed, and I prayed to receive Christ.
Well, Glenn has been wonderful to us, the speakers here, the navigators as a whole. And we've been greatly affected in that area. I think our lives have taken definitely a different direction and definitely a change. It didn't only just happen here, though. It also became that because of our contacts and a network of navigators that we started hanging around with a little bit different crowd, and things were a little different. We heard a lot of guys that encouraged us from the Word by speaking. We developed a network or a number of people that became models, became examples, became our heroes, people to pattern our lives after. We also had a few mentors, and that was a piece of it too. But all this led to three areas, I think, that are the biggest change and difference in our life. The first area is in the area of values. Paul said it, and you can't beat it. In Philippians chapter 3, he says, for whatever things were gained by me, I count as loss for the sake of Christ. More than that, I count everything as lost in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. Boy, we changed out a lot of tangible things for the intangibles in terms of our priorities and our values. Relationship with God was far more important than relationship with people. The things we had in the driveway were not as important as trying to please God. Another area that changed course, I think, was our life purpose. You know, God used people, not this building and not this room, and not the grounds out there, to get through to our lives. He used Mr. Sanchez. He used Gordon Van Amberg, Ron and Pat Parrish, Harold Tate, and a number of other people from there on out. And we figured a purpose for our life might be doing the very same thing, if we could, for someone else. Third and last area that's changed is perspective. Isaiah said in 40:31, "Yet those who wait for the Lord shall gain new strength and mount up with wings like eagles." Well, I was out of the driver's seat and I was waiting for him to push the pedals and turn the wheel. And so we were waiting. We certainly gained a new strength, a vitality, a source that was totally different in our lives. But what's as important as all of that was is that we began to mount up with wings like eagles. We got a different view of the old world. It was a little higher. It was a little loftier. It was circling. Our focus was sharper. It was totally different. We were circling in the heavens and a lot closer to God, and we saw this deal down here totally different. It's that view of history past and maybe the future to come. It's this perspective of what's going on in our own generation. It's the view also of how we encounter and see the details, the problems, and the blessings of our everyday life. And it's because of that perspective and the understanding we get out of this book that we have something to base the decisions for the rest of our life upon. We thank you.